Welcome to the PSDcast. We're the host, Jason Lumberg with Power Systems Design. And today we're discussing an exciting development as Astrobotic and Widebotic just completed flight testing of a wireless lunar charging system. This thing took place over 4 months under the most extreme conditions. And on the line to discuss this cool bit of news is Widebotic CEO, Ben Waters. So, Ben, thanks for joining us. And let's start with this. How did this collaboration with NASA, Astrobotic, and a couple universities first come about? Have you ever worked directly with NASA before?
Yeah, thanks, Jason. It's great to be here. And this collaboration started out, Widebotic was co-founded out of the PhD research that I had done at the University of Washington. I was an electrical engineering PhD student researching wireless charging. The lab that I graduated from, led by Professor Josh Smith, had previously worked on some grant projects with Astrobotic. And when NASA posted the topic regarding lunar night survival and particular focus around resistance to regolith and dust and being able to keep devices on the moon operating reliably during the lunar night, wireless charging was one of the big topics. And so Astrobotic, Widebotic, the University of Washington, and Bosch all decided to collaborate on an application proposal for a tipping point grant that could progress a technology that was already commercially viable for space applications and space qualification.
Okay, and this might seem self-evident, but why is wireless charging such a great fit for a lunar mission or even venturing out onto other celestial bodies?
Yeah, when it comes to powering things on the moon, regolith and the environment itself are two of the greatest challenges. You know, if you look back at pretty much any of the missions that have gone to Mars, why eventually have most of those been terminated or reached the end of their mission? Well, it's because the solar panels that provide power for the rovers or the drones or whatever eventually give out. And once that vehicle cannot power itself or charge its batteries, other bad things will happen and the vehicle will be rendered, terminated. So to think about how to solve this problem for lunar missions, which is, of course, the focus of the Artemis program at NASA, they had to think about a couple of things. First, a lot of these robots and a lot of these landers and eventually the human carrying vehicles are going to be battery operated. And so, of course, solar is the predominant way that most of these devices have been powered over the years. However, solar on the moon, of course, is only available during the day. The moon has approximately a 2 week long lunar night, and the temperature drops quite near absolute zero during that nighttime mission. If you followed some of the recent lunar landers, they go up. And really, their operational life is planned for just a week or two during the day in which, they're there. And then once the nighttime sets in, they're not expected to survive because they don't have the heaters. They don't have the power. They don't have, the capabilities intended to survive the night. But for now, that's expected. Moving forward, they want to be able to survive the night. So wireless power comes in because you need the ability for, let's just stick to robots for a second, for the robot to be able to get back to the lunar lander or the charging station of some sorts. You need power to be able to be transferred from, that larger device to the smaller device when solar is not available. And you need that power to be able to keep the heaters on the robot, because the heaters are really what keep it alive throughout the lunar night. All the electronics would just completely fail if the guts of the electronics, reach those same temperatures as the outside world. So That's really where wireless charging comes in. There's no solar, right? You could imagine having like a connector of sorts, some robotic arm that could extend out and plug in a cord, for example, to charge the robot. But now you've got all that extra power consumption to power the arm. Now that arm has to be resilient to surviving the lunar night, right? So it just gets compoundingly more complicated. And enter wireless charging, and now you've got the ability for the robot to just drive up before the lunar night sets in, get close, but with the Wibotic wireless charging system, we have a lot of positional flexibility. So for the uneven surface of the moon and so on and so forth, all the things that can contribute to the robot not being perfectly aligned, really benefits from wireless charging. And then the final aspect of that is regolith. So, dust really, with the zero gravity there, likes to find its way inside of things. And lunar regolith in particular is conductive. It has more iron composition than, dust here on Earth. And that means that it's going to be corrosive, and it's going to be a big challenge for any connector, to avoid getting coated in dust over time and eventually not providing a reliable connection. So all of those factors really make wireless really the best option for charging battery-powered devices, preparing them to survive the lunar night, and having a reliable way for them to get charged, even if, other factors are at play, like regolith or the terrain.
Okay, now what's Wibotic's exact part in this project? And I mentioned the system's stringent testing in the intro. Could you elaborate a bit on that?
Yes. So Wibotic's part in this project was, Wibotic has been around since 2015, and we offer a commercial industrial wireless charging system that operates between 100 watts and 1,000 watts. So we were focused on the electronics and the firmware aspects of designing, prototyping, and building the wireless charging transmitter, the component that resides on the lunar lander, which in this case is acting like the charging station for the robot, and then also the receiver, or which Wibotic calls the onboard charger, which resides on the robot and receives the wireless power and charges the battery. So we were focused on that aspect of this project. Astrobotic has a ton of experience and expertise in building the robots and performing a lot of the space qualification testing. So that's what they were responsible for, integrating it with the robot and performing all the space qualified testing. UW was focused on regolith and researching different simulants for regolith that accurately match the RF properties of real regolith on the moon. And Bosch was focused on sensing. Bosch was focused on how do you make the vehicles navigate with redundant sensors and redundant ways to make sure it's docked in position to receive the wireless power. So there were a ton of challenges to your second question there, designing these electronics to meet the temperature and space requirements for this application. Of course, our couple simple examples, right? Our commercial products are sometimes fan cooled. We have fans that blow air across that cool the electronics. Well, fans don't work in a vacuum, and so we had to convert the design to become passively cooled and heat sink heat through conductive means into the chassis of the devices with which they're mounted. Temperature was probably the biggest challenge. Temperature for some of the components, not all of the components, but for example, the antennas that receive the wireless power have to be mounted externally. You can't transfer power through a metal chassis of a robot, right? So the antenna that receives the power is outside of the robot, which means it's subjected to the full temperature range on the moon. Some of the other electronics, like the battery charging part of our circuit, reside inside the robot. So they benefit from, you know, heaters being able to keep the temperature a bit more reasonable. But the coil, full temperature range, hot and cold. And capacitors, particularly in cold, like a ceramic or, you know, an electrolytic capacitor, just won't survive. They'll literally freeze and crack. So, you know, we had to figure out how to design a circuit that typically relies on capacitors that can be mounted on the outside. And long story short, you know, we ended up using embedded layers of the printed circuit board to act as a parallel plate capacitor and, you know, performed a lot of testing for, you know, cycling temperature across that device from extreme negative temperatures to extreme positive temperatures. And another challenge I'll touch on was radiation. You know, any space qualified system has to survive radiation events from the sun, and they're much more exposed, you know, on their journey to the moon and once they're on the moon to these types of events than things are on Earth. And one of the biggest challenges is that, you know, for any MOSFET, your threshold voltages for turning the device on and off, for example, among other properties of the device, can change during a radiation event. And so this makes it quite difficult, right? Because we've got this circuit that's, you know, pumping out a lot of power through a power amplifier that's depending on a MOSFET essentially to switch quickly. And if something happens with that device and we can't switch, well, you know, then that device might fail. And now if that device fails, now the whole mission's over because the robot's not going to get charged up, right? So we had to do a lot of research into, you know, okay, do we, and pretty much any company designing electronics for space has to go through this, right? You know, you decide, all right, do we need to pick all components to be radiation hardened? Well, some components just might not exist in a rad-hardened package. So we heavily depended on GaN technology, which is more resilient than a traditional, you know, MOSFET technology type device to these things. So we rely heavily on GaN. We had to add a lot of resilience and E-fuses into certain critical parts of our system that could essentially detect a radiation event and then safely shut the system down. And then once that event is cleared, perform some diagnostic checks before just going back to full bore charging. So these things add a lot of complexity and a lot of additional things that our commercial products just simply don't need to make sure that they work in that space environment. So that's really what went into some of the design challenges. And I'll pause there, but I can touch on some of the testing, you know, that went into those systems after the designs were done as well, if you'd like.
Yeah, that's good. So let's get into specifics. What sort of power transfer efficiencies are we looking at now and in the near future?
Yeah. So for our commercial products, we typically operate between 80 to 90% system efficiency, which is quite common for any, you know, wireless charging system, right? And it's quite good, you know, if you just consider like the efficiency of a switch mode power supply for a plug-in charging system that's getting plugged into your AC outlet, right? You know, you're pretty much in that same camp with power factor ratings and other things. For our space system, particularly because of what I mentioned on the capacitance and the coils, when you rely on these parallel plate capacitors, quality factor of those is less than that of, you know, a highly intentionally designed RF capacitor meant for high voltage, high power switching applications, which has a direct effect on the efficiency of the system. So the efficiency of our space qualified system is about 10 to 15% lower than that, you know, mid-70s. And that is something that we continue to work on because efficiency is important, right? The more you don't have an unlimited power grid up there, and so, you know, as much power as you can get in, you want to be able to transfer to your devices. But that is a kind of a known trade-off here, trying to design these systems to meet the requirements of space. And yeah, but at the end of the day, the efficiency is in the mid-70s of this system. And we have two SKUs of this product, one that operates up to a maximum power level of 125 watts, and one that has a bit more heat sink capabilities. The electronics are largely the same, a little different on the mechanical, that can operate up to 400 watts of power delivered to the battery. And the final thing I'll say on the specs is that one of the unique things about our commercial systems, which we've carried forward to the space system, is the battery charging function is programmable. You know, a lot of the times when you buy a charger, you're buying it for a 24 volt, you know, lithium battery or a 48, or you're buying a different SKU for a 48 volt battery, right? But with our system, the DC to DC converter, the charge controller, is programmable between 0 to 60 volts. So this means that a customer could use this product for charging a 24 volt battery, and they could use the same SKU for charging a 48 volt battery. And if those are two different robots, for example, they could both go charge from the same charging station, because the charging function is programmable. And for space, this is particularly important, right? Because you may want to prioritize a mission where, hey, we need this robot to get up and running, but you know, it only needs to get to 60% charged, but it needs to get there as quick as it can, you know, and then this other robot, well, we can wait to charge that one until after this one's done, you know, because our energy grid is constrained. And so with that programmability, the the robot or the charging station, the transmitter, can make smart decisions about, you know, how to configure the chargers for charging in that moment in time. So those are some of the overview of the tech specs of the system.
Okay, Ben, before I let you go, when are you hoping to see this wireless lunar charging system deployed?
Yeah, so this system is currently designed into a robot that NASA Kennedy Space Center is developing. There's some press about it, you know, on NASA's website, and you can see kind of how they have integrated it. That mission does not have a firm date yet. There's a chance it goes in 2026, but more likely it would go in 2027. And then this is now that the testing is complete, you know, this funding was intended to make these systems commercially available. So these are now products that Wibotic and Astrobotic together manufacture, test, and we sell a model that is called the engineering model, which is the same hardware, but it doesn't go through all of the ruggedized testing that the second model we sell, called the flight model, would go through. So these products are now available for purchase. There's materials online, but certainly can reach out to Wibotic or Astrobotic through our websites to inquire about them. And we have sold flight model systems to some commercial companies who are privately funded to develop robots, power tools, lunar terrain vehicles. You know, any battery powered device between 0 to 60 volts is eligible to be able to use this this charger. But the NASA robot at KSC is expected to be the first robot that will go up to the moon equipped with this system, and we're very excited about that.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Ben. I want to thank you for your time, and to our audience, thanks for tuning in, and have a great day.